Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the last few weeks, I've wanted to look at different perspectives on self-image and disability. To wrap up this in-depth look, we're going to hear from Joanna Zine. So I've been talking recently with a lot of guests about the idea of self-image and disability. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I guess I have a lot of thoughts on that. We had our monthly meeting yesterday for Crohn's and colitis, and we had a couple new volunteers come in. I shouldn't call them volunteers yet. I'm getting excited because I want them to help me with the gutsy walk. But we had a couple new members come and join us last night at our meeting and introduce themselves and talked about what they had been through, and a couple had been through some really extensive surgeries. One was just recently diagnosed within the last couple months. Another had gone, a young girl. You could tell she was very upset because she had gone through over a year of pain and misdiagnosis, and now she has to wait between 2 months up to a year for a surgery to I can't remember what it's called. It's when you have like a blockage in your intestines and you can't make any passes.
We'll just call it blockage.
Yeah, we'll call it a blockage. So she was actually hospitalized for a week because of this, and even though she didn't say it out loud and even though the others didn't say it out loud, you could tell like there was a tension in the room about what it feels like to be going through something and not to be able to talk to anybody about it. It's not like, and I know I've said this like several times on this show, but it's not like a regular thing. Like I'm going to, like Thanksgiving is something that everybody can talk about, everybody loves talking about. It's great to share stories about Thanksgiving. But when you're going into surgery, and actually a mom of a two-year-old that was just was talking about how she could post a photo of her son, just a regular photo, and it would get 100 likes on Facebook. But when it came to attending the Gutsy Walk and asking for people for donations to help her son raise money for research to find a cure, she got little to no donations from Facebook. And it makes you kind of like put into perspective what people are, like how far people are willing to care, and then the point where they just don't care at all, and it hurts. I've never had Crohn's, so I can't say that I felt the pain myself, but I was very empathetic. If you can understand what I'm talking about, then you know exactly what I mean. It hurts a lot when you're going through a lot of pain and you can't share that pain with anyone who you just want them to understand. Not to feel sorry for you, just to understand.
Well, when it comes to things of that nature, you raised a very good point in that disability doesn't simply affect one person. It affects the friends, family, loved ones, the community itself.
I think that we have a lot of good things to look forward to this year with the Crohn's and Colitis Committee. I can tell that since the last Gutsy Walk, where we raised over double what we raised last year, we got a lot more publicity and a lot more people coming out to see what we're all about, and a lot more people kind of like saying, yeah, I have Crohn's too. Maybe this is something that I can be a part of. So I'm really eager to put together some more events. It's going to be totally different this year. We're going to have a full year calendar of events, and we're going to try to get some bigger sponsors out and have a lot more fun this year to hopefully like get some more awareness out, and also to raise some money for the research, of course.
So you're essentially breaking down these walls that people have. You've said it yourself that sometimes people are hesitant to talk, but if you bring it into the public eye with events like this, you really are giving something relatable, something understandable.
Yeah, we're going to do a lot of things. The last fashion show I did was pretty successful, and one of the big groups that came out to the event was so excited about it that they wanted to throw another fashion show event and promise that they would bring out a larger group of people next time, saying that it was because of Ramadan that they couldn't come out, which makes perfect sense, and I totally respect Ramadan. Of course, you can't go out after dusk, and you can't drink, you can't go to nightclubs, anything like that. If you're Muslim during Ramadan, it's a very sacred time. So they asked us to put on another fashion show. And actually, we got a lot of support from Arius Nightclub as well, who hosted the event. And they're putting a lot of effort towards helping us to find sponsors. They have a whole new system for donations. So we're all asking all the sponsors to put together guest lists, and all the models as well. So everybody who comes in on the guest list will be contributing. Arius will contribute $5 to Crohn's and Colitis Canada, and every walk-in will be another $5 donated to Crohn's and Colitis Canada. I think that it needs to be something that people are generally aware of and just accept, and then let us kind of live our lives with the understanding of the differences that we have. It's like just like anything else, really.
So it's one aspect of who a person is, and not something that is predominant for who they are.
Yeah. Actually, I have a couple things I want to talk about, too, if that's okay with you.
Certainly.
So we have our... We have an honorary chair for the Gutsy Walk every year. Last year was Lauren, and she came onto the show with her mom and talked for a bit. And
I remember her.
Yeah,
short
the other
person,
kid.
Right?
Short blonde person. You wouldn't even know she has Crohn's. And the other boy that came with her is very quiet, was Ben. And I don't know why he was quiet on the radio show, because he's not quiet in real life. But he's going to be our honorary chair this year. And he's been through a lot. He was on the Modulin diet, and was drinking that 6 times a day, was strictly on Modulin, and even swore to his doctor that if that would keep him healthy for the rest of his life, then he would always stay on that diet, which kind of goes to show you how scared he was of going through the pain of symptoms with no medication again. Totally terrified to the point where he didn't care about eating food anymore. That's another reason why I work so hard, because without talking about it, you don't realize what these people are going through. You can say pain, but pain means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Some people have never been through anything at all, and bless them, but some people have been through a lot. And we need to be more compassionate about how we treat those people. And I'm so happy for him, because he's finally off of Modulin and he's on Remicade now. The treatments are okay, but he's able to eat normal food and he's doing really well. Yeah, he's actually, we can pray for him today, because he's having a colonoscopy in London at SickKids Hospital. So hopefully that goes well and he shows up with no symptoms. But he's going to be able to go to the Go Camp hosted by Crohn's and Colitis Canada in Toronto area, Richmond Hill, with all these other kids who have Crohn's and Colitis Canada. And he's so excited about that, because he finally gets to be around other kids without his mom or dad or other brothers and sisters around, just all on his own, first time going to camp. and he gets to do it with people that understand who he is. You know, he wouldn't really be able to go to a regular camp because they don't have the special things like paramedics or extra bathrooms that he would need to take care of him. So I'm really excited about this Go Camp.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Oh, thank you so much, Kim.
Of course. In some previous interviews, Joanna has said that Crohn's and colitis, not a condition that's discussed very openly. Fact is, I don't understand this. A disability is a disability. It is one factor of who a person is. And why should we, as a society, tiptoe around these matters? Goes to the stigmas around mental illness, things of that nature. Why are we afraid to talk about it? The work is being done to improve things for these people. And shouldn't we recognize the efforts of people like Joanna and the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation to step into these matters and say, we believe that awareness can be raised, and we believe that matters can improve. But the key, folks, as always, is partnerships, community support, having a message of equality, understanding, and hope that the world can get better. That's fine and dandy. But the truth is, it's about getting that message out. It is about raising awareness. It is about partnering with the community to say, yes, this is something that is affecting a large number of people. And no, it doesn't have to be all-defining. It doesn't have to be limiting. It can be something we work together on just to make things a little bit better for our fellow human beings. And why would anybody hold back at such a prospect? HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Old Walkerville Theater presents the Red Dirt Skinners. With their twangy sound and outstanding harmonies, the duo that is the Red Dirt Skinners takes to the stage on September 30th at 7 p.m. Tickets are $20 in advance and can be purchased at the Old Walkerville Theater box office or OLDEWalkervilleTheater.com. Don't miss this chance to see the UK's favorite folk-defying band. Walkerville Theatre is located at 1564 Wyandotte Street East.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Joanna Zien. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Bill Simmons from American Leprosy Missions. So tell me a little bit about the Leprosy Missions.
So American Leprosy Missions is an organization that was founded in 1906 in New York City by a group of people who cared a lot about people around the world affected by leprosy. At the time, the only way to treat leprosy was really just to care for people. And so they were motivated by compassion. And over the years, our organization has continued to grow and develop as the ways of treating leprosy have changed. And medicine has become available to kill the bacteria through antibiotic treatment. And our mission has evolved along with that, so that today we work on behalf of people affected by leprosy around the world, ensuring that they continue to receive the cure that is available. We work to see that they're cared for and understand how to adapt to their lives, which so often have disability that accompanies them. And we also work to see that the effects of the disease are ended in their lives, and we aspire that we can end the disease forever with the development of a vaccine to interrupt the transmission of the disease. So that's what we do and what we've been doing for 110 years.
So how do you go about spreading the word about this work?
Well, we talk to people like you on the radio and let people know. Yeah, it's an interesting question. How do you spread a topic like leprosy when many people around the world have come to believe that leprosy has even been eradicated? I run into people all the time that say that, and I use an example where in the United States, the number of people who are diagnosed with breast cancer every year is the same number of people who are diagnosed with leprosy around the world. And what would it be like if people felt that breast cancer had been eradicated? And this is the reality for people affected by leprosy around the world. It's a disease that has very low awareness and yet impacts real people in significant numbers. And raising awareness about that, I think, is something that's very difficult work. People are no longer confronted with leprosy in the news or in their neighborhoods, and as a result, people affected by leprosy have been relegated to the sidelines and have been, in many cases, completely removed from the minds of most people in the Western world.
So, for those who might not be as familiar, how does leprosy typically affect a person?
So leprosy is a bacteria, and it's spread from one person to another and incubates slowly over time. And so leprosy is a disease that you may not know you have even been infected with for up to 20 years. And when you do realize that you might have leprosy, it would start as a skin patch somewhere on your body. It's not going to bother you. It doesn't itch. It's not sensitive to pain. And that's really what happens with leprosy over time. Left untreated, the nerves in your body, in your peripheral nervous system, in your hands and your feet, start to be damaged by the leprosy bacteria. And that's the damage that leprosy does. It really attacks your nerves. And so leaving those bacteria untreated means that you're going to have nerve damage. And that nerve damage is not repairable. Even though we can kill the bacteria with antibiotics, that doesn't do anything for the nerves that have been damaged and beyond repair for the rest of your life. And so this is where the disabilities from leprosy start to evolve, especially in developing cultures where people don't wear the right kinds of shoes and they work out in fields. And as a result, when you don't have the ability to feel pain in your hands or your feet over time, you're going to injure yourself, or you're going to have muscle atrophy, and you're going to begin to have what people would see as some sort of disfigurement as a result of the bacteria's attack on your nervous system in your body.
So, in your time with American Leprosy Missions, has there been any success that stood out for you in terms of raising awareness?
I would say that I'm reminded of a time in Nepal where I met a man who had been affected by leprosy as a child. He had been forced to leave his home, and he found a way to get an education, but he had ongoing complications from leprosy, and his name was Minadin. And Minadin, through some complications one day, finally found his way to a partner of ours in Nepal in a little town called Janakpur. And he discovered that there were actually ways to manage his disease. And as he discovered these, he began to realize that not only could he live a more productive life and not be encumbered by his disabilities, but he discovered that he had the capacity to empower other people and to raise awareness about the disease. And so I went to this town one day in particular, and imagine this dirty town in southern, and it's on the border with northern India, and there's cows and cars and bicycles everywhere. And gathered underneath this large tree, shade tree, are tables, almost like doctor exam room tables. And they're sitting out everywhere. And what Minadin had the audacity to do was to gather a group of people affected by leprosy and the Red Cross and do an open-air blood drive. And the significance of that in that culture and community was that in a culture where people felt like leprosy was a curse and was highly contagious and was something you should avoid all of your life. What he was able to do in that moment was to demonstrate that, yes, leprosy exists, but it's not contagious like you think it is. And in fact, because we've all been treated, our blood is clean and it's fine. And the Red Cross is here to accept our blood as demonstrating proof that the disease that is so visibly impacting all of our lives is not something to be afraid of. And that really stuck with me, because I think seeing Minadin in a culture like that have the audacity to demonstrate to people around him and raise awareness, not only about leprosy, but about how to treat people who are affected by leprosy, I think that's inspired us a lot of times here in our work to try to find every opportunity we have, whether we are speaking to groups or church groups somewhere, or we're sending out mailings to people, or we're gathering groups of donors together to tell them about our work in depth. What we really are trying to do is to equip people to tell others about leprosy, about its impact on real people around the world, and that it's not something you have to be afraid of when you encounter it. So, but Minadin is always in my mind when I think about what it means to raise awareness for disease, but also to destroy the destructive power that stigma can have in people's minds.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Kira Royal, who'll be sharing some accessibility observations about Manitoba. So, from your time out in Manitoba, can you tell me about some of the accessibility features you've noticed?
I haven't noticed a lot of accessibility features in Manitoba. In Winnipeg, I have noticed a lot of wheelchair ramps, but there hasn't been much accessibility. The one building that I noticed a lot of accessibility was the Human Rights Museum in Winnipeg. But other than that, it's very basic, nothing too extraordinary or groundbreaking.
So, is there anything you could suggest that might improve the situation in this way?
I definitely think kind of going past thinking of just disabilities in wheelchairs and kind of expanding our view of disabilities, especially in Manitoba, kind of getting those resources, getting more accessibility in other buildings. So whether that be like Braille, making videos more accessible with sign language interpreters, anything like that would be awesome.
So, if you could send any message about the need for these upgrades, what would you say?
I would say that we need to expand our view of disability and with that accessibility, and that accessibility really is kind of a life-changing thing. It really impacts somebody's life with a disability. It can make them less isolated. And we kind of have to move into the 21st century kind of thinking about disability.
So to look at things beyond just the buildings out there, have you noticed mm-hmm. anything such as accessible parking, for example?
Yeah, there is accessible parking. Pretty standard, just the kind of spots like Ontario. It's a pretty, like, basic kind of accessibility.
But going back to your message there, so you think we should look beyond just the basic requirements, just going a little bit more than what the law says you must have this sort of thing in place?
Yes, of course. I think the law does a very bare minimum of what we need for disabilities, and I think the law also very categorizes disabilities as everybody is the same that has a certain disability, and that's definitely not true. We're all individuals, and we all have different needs, even if we have the same disability. So I think with lawmakers and even communities, they really need to reach out with people with disabilities and see what we need instead of just assuming what we need.
So in previous interviews, you've talked about things such as mental health awareness. Is there anything that could be put in place for someone affected with this that you can think of?
I think really making education and resources available. I think first we need to educate communities for stigma to be less prevalent. And with that, I believe that people with mental illness will feel a lot more accepted by their communities. In addition, I think our lawmakers really need to step it up with mental health care, and we really need to make it a priority. We don't need more waiting lists when situations are dire. I'd
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
You know, it's amazing what Kira was saying about how we need to think beyond just the legal requirements. But I don't think necessarily it's a matter of people wanting to limit themselves. It can be a matter of just not taking the time to consider that to us, it can be just writing a check for an expense for an accessibility upgrade. But to somebody that it affects, it can mean the difference between getting to work every day and not. People have this tendency to want to make things better for people with disabilities, as was reflected in Bill's story about the man from Nepal. The fact that he was trying to help others, a community where legal protections would be questionable for people with disabilities and resources almost non-existent, he took the time, he took the care to say, we can do better. We can make this something manageable. And you don't have to be ruled by your condition. Relates to what Kira was saying in so much as if people have the right resources and someone just takes the time to say, I want to be a positive influence, things do get done. But the fact is, people who have a heart for the disabled community really have a heart for it. They find themselves wanting to expand, wanting to take the next step. And it really is more than just a job or a paycheck. It's something that really gives you that sense that maybe you're changing the world. Maybe it's just one person at a time, but allowing that somebody for the very first time to understand that leprosy is not all-defining or mental illness is not something we should shy away from can be life-changing. Truth is, it doesn't just stop with doing good by one person in the disabled community. Once that person understands that they are a potentialed, capable human being, that never goes away. And they may be that someone who takes it a step further. But I was really floored by what Bill said about how this man had to leave his own place where he had lived, and he was so lost and affected by his condition. Then he came to understand that it didn't have to control him. And he wanted to share that. He took it upon himself to take it to what sounded like a very remote place to where people affected might never have even considered the possibility that, hey, this isn't just a part of life. This isn't nature telling me I have to be in pain, or I have to have nerve damage, or it doesn't have to be a curse. It is not something that the gods or God is doing to punish us. It is something medical, something we can see, something we can treat, something that doesn't have to be an all-defining factor. It's really a remarkable thing, and really, that's what it's all about, the perception, how we see it ourselves, and how the community understands what disability is. Do we see it as all-encompassing, or do we see it as manageable, treatable? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.